All right, so picture this. You've got someone dealing with some like really bad harassment at work, wins their case, but the actual money they get is just $1. But get this, the company ends up paying a whopping $300,000. Kind of a head scratcher, right?
Definitely makes you wonder how that happens.
It does. And that's what we're diving into today.
Yeah, this case, State of Arizona v. Asarco LLC, a Ninth Circuit decision that goes deep on Title VII. You know, those big punitive damage awards and how that all ties in with the Constitution and due process.
So, like, what are we aiming for in this deep dive today? What's the big takeaway?
I think the goal here is to really understand how those limits Congress puts on punitive damages in employment discrimination cases, you know, the statutory caps, how those work when you run into constitutional due process issues. Like, what does it all mean for how the law actually protects people?
Right, because there's the law on the books, and then there's how it actually gets applied.
Exactly. And to figure that out, we're going to dissect the Ninth Circuit's en banc opinion in State of Arizona v. Asarco LLC. Plus, we'll pull out some super helpful insights from a case brief that breaks down the ruling.
Okay, so let's set the scene. We're talking about Angela Aguilar, who worked at Asarco's copper mine for about a year, right? And it sounds like her work environment was, well, pretty rough.
Yeah, rough might be an understatement. The evidence showed like really severe and pervasive harassment, you know?
Like, what kind of stuff are we talking about here?
You're talking sexual comments aimed directly at Mrs. Aguilar, pornographic graffiti that was like targeted and really offensive, and even claims that she was retaliated against for speaking up about what was going on.
Wow, so it wasn't a healthy workplace. Not by a long shot.
It paints a pretty clear picture of a hostile and discriminatory work environment, that's for sure.
And this whole thing wasn't just one lawsuit, right? Sounds like things were happening on both the federal and state levels.
Absolutely. Mrs. Aguilar went ahead and filed claims under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That's the big federal law that says no to workplace discrimination, right?
Right.
And also under the Arizona Civil Rights Act, which is basically Arizona's version of Title VII.
So she's covering both bases, federal and state.
Right. But there's more. The Arizona Civil Rights Division, working as part of the Attorney General's office, also went after Asarco for the same stuff, but using state laws.
So double trouble for Asarco.
Yeah, they were facing legal heat from multiple directions.
So the case goes to trial, and the jury comes back with a verdict on damages. That's, well, it's kind of wild when you think about it.
It is pretty striking. The jury found Asarco liable for sexual harassment, no question about it. Now, here's the interesting part. They awarded Mrs. Aguilar just $1 in nominal damages.
$1? That seems almost symbolic.
That's precisely what nominal damages are. It's like saying, hey, you were wronged, but we can't really put a dollar amount on the harm. But then, on top of that $1, they slammed Asarco with a massive $868,750 in punitive damages under Title VII.
Whoa, hold on. From $1 to almost $1 million, that's a huge jump.
You're telling me, but here's the catch. There's a limit to how high those punitive damages can go under Title VII.
Right. I've heard about that. It's not a free-for-all.
Exactly. Because Asarco was a big company, you know, over 500 employees, they fell under Title VII's cap on punitive damages. And back then, that cap, which you can find in federal law, specifically 42 U.S.C. Section 1981, AB3D, was set at $300,000.
So the court had to bring down the hammer, so to speak, and lower that initial award.
Yep. The district court had no choice but to reduce the punitive damages to that $300,000 max.
So Asarco is still on the hook for a big chunk of change, even with the cap. But they weren't happy about it. This is where their constitutional argument about due process comes in, right?
Bingo. Sarka's argument was basically, hey, even this reduced $300,000 is way too much. It's unconstitutional. Their big point was the huge gap between the $300,000 in punitive damages and that single dollar in nominal damages. They're talking a 300,000 to 1 ratio.
Wow, that's some serious disproportion.
It is. And they claimed this violated what the Supreme Court laid out in BMW of North America, Inc. v. Gore. That case is all about the limits on punitive damages.
Right, BMW v. Gore. That's like constitutional law 101, right? Could you give us a quick refresh on the key factors the Supreme Court set out in that case?
Sure thing. In BMW v. Gore, the Supreme Court gave us three guidelines, sometimes called guideposts, to figure out if a punitive damages award is so over the top that it violates the 14th Amendment's due process clause.
Okay, so what are those guideposts? What are we looking at?
The first one, and it's usually considered the most important, is how bad the defendant's conduct was. Like, how truly awful were their actions? Lawyers call this reprehensibility.
So how bad was it? Did they act really badly?
Exactly. The second thing to consider is the ratio between the punitive damages and the actual or nominal harm suffered by the plaintiff. It's often expressed as, a fraction or a proportion.
So like how much punishment compared to the actual damage?
Precisely. And the third thing courts look at are the penalties given in similar cases, both civil and criminal, in that particular jurisdiction. They want to see if things are consistent.
Makes sense. Keep it fair and balanced.
Right. So in the ASARCO case, they're laser focused on that second factor, that huge ratio. They're saying, come on, this is way out of line with the actual harm we had to pay for. But guess what? The Ninth Circuit, sitting en banc, that means all the judges were there for this one, ended up disagreeing with ASARCO.
Really? So they thought the punishment fit the crime, despite that huge ratio?
That's exactly what they said. The majority opinion, written by Chief Judge Thomas, said that when Congress sets a cap on punitive damages in Title VII cases, it basically automatically satisfies due process.
So just setting a limit in the law is enough to make it constitutional.
Yeah.
That's an interesting take. What was their logic behind that?
They made a couple of key points. First, they emphasized that this statutory cap gives employers a heads up. It tells them, look, if you break Title VII, this is the worst case scenario financially. That's a basic part of due process, right? Everyone should know the potential consequences of their actions.
Makes sense. You break the rules, you pay the price.
Exactly. And second, the court argued that the cap itself acts as a safety net. You know, it prevents juries from going overboard and hitting companies with totally out of control awards. Basically, Congress already drew a line in the sand.
So that cap, in their view, is already a constitutional check and balance.
Exactly. But what about that first gore factor, the reprehensibility thing? Did the Ninth Circuit just ignore that?
Yeah, how bad ASARCO's actions were. Did they even consider that?
Oh, they absolutely did. Actually, they highlighted how bad ASARCO's conduct was as a key reason for upholding that $300,000 award, even with the cap. The court pointed to all the evidence from trial.
What kind of evidence are we talking about here?
Evidence that showed ASARCO knew about Mrs. Aguilar's complaints, knew about the horrible harassment, and did next to nothing to fix it. That's a pretty big disregard for her rights, and the court wasn't letting them off the hook for that.
So even though the direct financial harm was tiny, shown by that $1 award, ASARCO's failure to stop the harassment was enough to justify that big punitive award.
Absolutely. The majority opinion even had some strong language about this. They basically said that when Congress sets a cap, it kind of replaces that strict mathematical ratio analysis from Gore. The cap itself is Congress saying, this is what we consider a fair and constitutional punishment. It's a balance between deterring discrimination and due process. The court recognized that the harm goes beyond just the individual. It hurts society as a whole, and Congress has the power to address that through these laws.
So the cap acts as a kind of pre-approved constitutional boundary, in a way. But wait, wasn't this decision split? We talked about how the initial panel of judges actually saw things differently, right?
Oh, you're right. It's important to mention that. At first, a three-judge panel from the Ninth Circuit actually wanted to reduce the punitive damages even further, to $125,000, even lower than the cap.
Really? So even that $300,000 cap was too high for them?
Yeah, they're really focused on that punitive to nominal damage ratio, saying, even with the cap, the difference was just too big and therefore unconstitutional. But there was a dissent, Judd Hurwitz, who disagreed. He argued that the $300,000 cap set by Congress was perfectly fine.
So he kind of predicted where the full court would eventually land.
Yeah, he anticipated the en banc majority opinion. This disagreement really shows how complicated these legal questions are and how different judges interpret the balance between laws and the Constitution. It's not always cut and dry.
So, no easy answers. For our listeners out there, especially those hitting the books in law school, what are the biggest takeaways from the ASARCO case?
There's a lot to unpack here, but I think there are five key things to remember. First, these statutory caps on punitive damages, like the one in Title VII, are a big deal. They can really protect against constitutional challenges. Claiming an award is out of proportion to the actual damages. Courts tend to give a lot of weight to what Congress decides.
So if Congress sets a limit, it's much harder to argue that an award up to that limit is unconstitutional just because of the ratio to compensatory damages.
Yeah, that's usually how courts are looking at it these days. Second, this case is a wake-up call for employers. If you know about harassment and don't do enough to stop it, you're playing with fire, legally and financially. Even if the immediate financial harm to an employee is small, like we saw with the nominal damages here, if your actions are seen as really bad, you could be looking at a huge punitive damages bill.
So that $1 didn't protect DeSarco from a much larger penalty at all.
Nope, not when it comes to punitive damages. And that brings us to the third point. Nominal damages don't automatically limit how much you can be hit with in punitive damages, especially if the employer's conduct is malicious or reckless, which is the standard for punitive damages under Title VII. It's not just about making the victim financially whole, it's about punishing bad behavior. Fourth, ASARCO shows us that courts generally respect what Congress decides about punitive damages in discrimination cases. They see it as Congress doing its job to prevent discrimination while still upholding due process.
So Congress has a lot of leeway here.
Definitely. And finally, this case really drives home the point that Title VII isn't just about making an individual whole financially. The fifth key takeaway is that it's also about punishing and preventing discrimination in the workplace as a whole. Punitive damages are a big part of that, even when the harm to a specific person is hard to measure or is relatively small.
It's about sending a message, right?
Absolutely. It's about saying this behavior won't be tolerated.
So to wrap this all up, it sounds like ASARCO is a landmark case for understanding how what Congress does, like setting caps on damages, can have a big impact on how courts look at the Constitution and punitive damages, especially in cases about discrimination. For law students, this case shows how laws and the Constitution are always interacting.
Exactly. It's a dynamic interplay, always evolving, and it leaves us with something to think about. Given this ruling, how can employers show they're not ignoring employee rights, even in situations where the immediate harm might not be obvious? What are the ethical implications of big punitive awards when the direct financial harm to the person is small? These are questions worth pondering. I'd suggest taking a look at the full bank opinion and maybe comparing it to other due process cases dealing with punitive damages. It's a great way to deepen your understanding of this complex area of law.
Food for thought, everyone. That's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
And always stay curious.